Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey, and let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, when I say each week that we couldn't get on the air without Audrey's assistance and her assistants, Emily and Mike, and tonight is actually a case about that. Blog Talk Radio was having a minimal amount of situations with time zone problems, and ours was one of them, so we rushed to get the show changed back. It was scheduled for midnight. I don't know if anybody looked on the course website and saw that, but along with Emily, Mike, and Audrey, and Jason from the outstanding support staff at Blog Talk Radio, we're on at the regular time. So here we are. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. Johnny Cash, he does it again. You know, those fuel prices are down, so you can get rides all over that country right now, I think. So, Johnny, you'd appreciate today I was listening to that old Convoy song, country and western song you've probably heard before, probably even sang it, and they were talking about hiding the swindle sheet before they got stopped by the cops, something truckers probably know a little bit about. But we're ready to go tonight, and I hope you'll enjoy the show. Our purpose is to discuss news issues and events and developments in this always difficult and intriguing and sometimes humorous practice of the field of criminal justice, and our show's dedicated to those tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed around the world. And we're always sympathetic when police officers die or are injured seriously in the line of duty, and I don't think folks know, they do. Perhaps it's slight exaggeration that they put their life on the line every day. They enjoy the work. They come back from vacation early to do it, but it's a job that takes courage. We do know that, and not everyone can do it. And we're always saddened when we hear that law enforcement agents, or our corrections officials too, they're law enforcement agents, are injured in the line of duty. What we try to do here is look inside criminal justice, take a close-up look at its professionals, and every now and then, I think about 14 years ago, no, we weren't on that long ago, somebody says we were sort of the NPR of criminal justice practice. And tonight we're actually going to use some NPR segments, so they should be glad of that. Blog Talk Radio is a leading-edge technology. Al Leedy is the CEO. He's the genius behind the medium. I always say that, and it's just an outstanding facility. In these tough times, I hear about college radio stations going off the air, when in fact they could be broadcasting on BTR for, what's that price? Yes, I think it's zero. I'm not sure how many hours a week you can do now, but I think it's a lot. And they just keep adding shows. I just saw on the major feature billing there, if you go feature, one of the new shows on there is Kreskin. Remember him, the magician? He was a memory expert and a magician and a mind reader. And maybe sometime I'll show you a couple of things on how he did that as it ties in with memory and plants in the audience. It would be something interesting to do, wouldn't it, Audrey, to take a little bit out of my memory skills for police seminar and our memory skills book and maybe do 50 minutes on that some night if people would be interested. But what's possible, ladies and gentlemen, in this medium that is now one of the top 100 websites in the world, that's BTR, any person, interest group, organization can have their own show. They can broadcast in streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and yes, the price is absolutely free. So I would encourage folks that may have something to say about almost anything. You can, in fact, do it. Take a look at the billing on Blog Talk Radio. It's just incredible. If you can't find 50 things on there that you're interested in, you're probably interested in nothing. So get your own show. It is possible. Tonight we're going to do something just a little bit different. I have listened all week and read newspaper articles about the last week or two about the hits they're trying to do on Sheriff Joe Arpaia in Maricopa County / Phoenix, Arizona. And this is one gentleman in the United States. There are others, and we'll hear one tonight. But this is one of the few law enforcement executives that stands up. He understands, he gets it, about the consequences of illegal immigration into the United States. And because he's trying to do something about it, the ACLU and other organizations, immigrant rights / illegal immigrant rights groups, are often trying to slow him down. In fact, the court now, the federal, I'll have a new show story about that tonight, but the court is trying to slow him down also, and we'll have more to say about that later. What you can do as a listener, you can listen on your phone. You can listen totally on the computer with your speakers up, of course, and you can call into the show tonight and make comments, and the call is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. We can hold five callers on the switchboard at the same time. I'm not sure Big Studios can actually do that. And what we'll do is let you talk to each other, if you like, ask questions about what's going on tonight relative to our topic. And all these shows are archived almost immediately. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes after the show's over. And you can download that show and keep it. We know that some faculty members across the United States use some of these shows that are pertinent to the subject matter of their course on occasion. So there's a good, you can take out maybe, I wouldn't take out Audrey's blood joke. I'd leave that in there and certainly leave in Johnny Cash. So if you got 55 minutes, then this would be something that you could use in class if the topic was appropriate. Well, ladies and gentlemen, each week we probably have one or two listeners who join us over the ones that regularly listen. I don't know how many that is. I suppose I could check. But Audrey always tells us a blonde joke, and Audrey is from London, England. And Audrey has been a collector of blonde jokes since childhood. She has the largest collection of blonde jokes in the world. I think she has them stored away in some secret lockbox somewhere. And she has one set for us tonight. Audrey, all set with your blonde joke for this evening? Okay, I haven't heard this one, so I'm going to see. Okay, it's about...
Professor Haley, I have a joke tonight that we will call a brunette joke. I hope that our listening audience will enjoy it. Here it goes. A young brunette goes into the doctor's office and says that her body hurts wherever she touches it. Impossible, says the doctor. Show me. She takes her finger and pushes her elbow and screams in agony. She pushes her knee and screams, pushes her ankle and screams, and so on it goes. The doctor says, "Well, not really a brunette, are you?" She says, "No, I'm really a blonde." "I thought so," he says. "Your finger is broken."
If Fingers no gun. That is a good one. Thank you very much, Audrey. And ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, in this age when firearms are at risk in terms of their deployment in the United States and their purchase and registrations and restrictions on ammunition and perhaps the assault weapons ban is coming back, we certainly want to be sure that firearms are not illegally used in the United States. And the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms has prepared this public service announcement that we are very fond of playing. And we hope that the recipients of this message, the directed recipients, the gangers and the crooks and the robbers on the street who use firearms, will listen to this message and go turn in their guns.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and we certainly, like I said, hope that the right people get to hear that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a little look at the news here tonight. There's lots of it, more than I have time to actually discuss, and a lot of it is pertinent to our subject tonight, but let's start with the bizarre. We do that once in a while, don't we, Mike? Right. This is one, you know, around the United States, for about the last, I'm guessing, 5 or 6 years, there are a few communities, I know there have been some in Louisiana places, that have had a law against saggers, you know, sagging trousers. And I don't understand those laws because I think in the interest of public safety, if we could get more criminals to wear saggers, then they would be incapable of running from even the most out of shape police officers, wouldn't you think, Mike? I would think that. And I've seen people stand up in classroom settings. At least one, he stood up and his saggers went all the way to the floor. He was embarrassed about it. I imagine some would not be. But when they try to run on those saggers, especially the ones that are sort of tied together at halfway down the thigh, it makes it even more difficult. Well, here's a story out of Germany. Where saggers were. It says here a German robber was caught after he escaped with his loot, but he left his trousers behind. Thomas Kohler, 21, he punched a taxi driver, Daniel Eiffel, 53, in the face, and he made to run off with his mobile phone. But as he turned to flee the cabbie grabbed his loose-fitting trousers, which were torn free as he fled. Mr. Eiffel said, my natural reaction as he tried to make off of my phone was to grab him, but I could only reach his trousers. He kept struggling and managed to wiggle out of them, and he ran off naked. Mr. Eiffel called police on the phone that he borrowed from a passerby, gave him a description of the trouserless crook. He said, I didn't think the police would have a hard job catching a man running around the city in his underwear. Police successfully arrested the thief at a train station trying to board a train in his underpants. Yeah, probably won't let you do that in Germany and most nations of the world. So see, these saggers get it. If they're trying to escape on a bicycle, it's almost impossible. I've seen that in Dallas. Some of the style there is to wear these saggers that are sort of sewed up at the, down to the knees, and boy, that hurts to try to ride a bicycle. So something different. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've had tragic cases of gun violence. We had the one in Germany here yesterday, where 11 people were killed. And Germany is now passing a law. They're changing the ownership age from 18 to 21. That followed a shooting in 2002 that killed 16 people. But they want to do more about this. Belgium, Switzerland, Portugal, Denmark, the European Union itself, they're asking now for proposed tighter gun control across the block, including guidelines saying that people over 18 not deemed a threat to public safety could buy and keep guns. They'd have to be 18. European members have until 2010 to adopt the measures. We have laws like this after Columbine. We had more laws after Virginia. After the killing there at Virginia Tech in 2007, the state of Virginia passed a law that said that anybody that had a mental health treatment, that they could add that to the database of people barred from buying guns. Texas had already done that, by the way. Texas, you had to go through, like, to get a concealed carry license, you have to go about 5 different background checks, including taxes. You know, pay your taxes. In Texas, you can't get a CCW license, but a mental health check was one of those. So that's probably a good law. And I suspect, you know, how legislators like to so-called jump out in front of a movement, never lead themselves, but, you know, put their finger in the air and figure which way it's going and then jump out in front. That's interesting. Now, here's a case out of Denver that relates to our subject tonight. An identity theft investigation in northern Colorado that has implicated more than 1,000 people suspected of being illegal immigrants. It's been halted now by a judge until he decides whether the tactics they used were legal. The judge, James Hyatt of the State District Court, he wants Weld County officials to hand over all the documents they got in a search of a tax preparer's office. And the American Civil Liberties Union is against Will County's district attorney and the sheriff, who together undertook this investigation. And, of course, they're looking for illegal immigrants who would be using false IDs. The investigation inspired a debate over whether local authorities can use personal tax information to pursue suspects on identity theft. And very interesting. The inquiry so far has led to the arrest of 62 people on identity theft, on criminal prosecution or criminal impersonation charges, and warrants have been issued for the arrest of 59 other people. What happens, the Supreme Court heard a case this week on the issue of, can you in fact enhance the penalty for a illegal immigrant who has a Social Security card that actually has a number on it belonging to some American citizen, and some do. And, of course, the question is how many Social Security cards do they have? But anyway, the judges were considering that this is unfair. Just by the luck of the draw, you happen to select a number, and you didn't know that it actually belonged to a real person. What happens, the government can get you an extra 2 years in prison as a result of this additional charge. And I think our Supreme Court's going to say that this is kind of unfair. Absolutely incredible. Doesn't this start, ladies and gentlemen, with illegal immigration? They're not supposed to be here, period. I don't care what the reason is. They violated law to get here, and now we're saying that they've been sucked in on something, in terms of just accidentally getting a real Social Security number. Just incredible. I think you probably noticed New York Times had a little article about it. Some other places did too. And now the gentleman that helped plan 9/11, they've been residents of our fine facility down there at one of our nation's commentators, radio commentators called Club Gitmo. They have now issued a statement that they are proud of what they did in terms of the 9/11 assault. And what they're going to do is, they're proud of it as a matter of pride. They don't have any guilt whatsoever about this particular circumstance. And, I think we should make them even more proud. I think that this would be a good time for them to join the martyrdom, and maybe we can do something about that. But 5 of them said they were charged with planning September 11, 2001. They filed a document with a military commission at the U.S. Naval Base, and they're expressing pride at their accomplishment. It says the actions were an offering to God, according to excerpts of the document, and this is just absolutely great. Of course, President Obama, he's halted the military proceedings at Guantanamo in the first days after his inauguration, and the 5 men's case is on hiatus until the government decides how it will proceed. So what are we going to do with these people? I've got a couple ideas, but probably shouldn't say them on the radio. Of course, this event, lest you forget, was responsible for killing 3,000 people, and they're going into court boasting, will be going into court, military court, or court boasting about this particular thing. Absolutely incredible. President Obama just saved 25 police jobs in Columbus, Ohio. That was a noble effort there. Columbus, I'm sure, needs police. It's a community that's still growing, and they were going to be laid off because of budget cutbacks, but I think based on the stimulus package, Columbus got enough money to put these officers on the job for I think more than 1 year. So that's good. We can't be cutting down too much on police officers on the street. And boy, nationwide there are lots of jobs lost, but there are states I'm hearing, you know, that are not doing that bad. I think I mentioned last week West Virginia's unemployment rate is 2%. Some of these states are deciding not even to take this stimulus package money. I think I heard, this is secondhand, the Governor Perry of Texas said that they're not going to accept any of the money. But that's sort of the Texas spirit, if it's in fact true. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think what we're going to do, we have a lot to do tonight in terms of extra segments. We're going to switch over and start taking a look at some of the issues relative to illegal immigration. And many of these things, these segments that I'm going to play in these interviews, will in fact mention Sheriff Arpaio by name, and his agency will be either recognized or chastised based on what they're doing in terms of stopping illegal immigration. And essentially what the sheriff's doing, he's doing something about it. And I commend him for that, and I hope others will support him. This isn't the first time he's been sued over something, and you'll hear some of the comments about that now. So I think one of the first things we're going to do here, we're going to take a look at Chuck Jenkins. He's sheriff in Frederick County, Maryland, and he's going to be joined by Frank Sherry, executive director of America's Voice. That's a organization that favors comprehensive immigration reform. And this sort of puts the immigration debate in perspective. And one of the issues here is that Sheriff Jenkins uses this, what they call 287G authority, where his officers, some have been trained by ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and that allows them to do record checks of anybody booked into their jail and find out if they're legal immigrants. Most places in the United States do not do that. So here we go with this segment, and I think you'll enjoy it, and I'll comment later.
Support for this service comes from NPR stations, which are independent and funded in part by their listeners. Please give to your station today.
I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Thanks again to Cheryl Corley and Corba Coleman for sitting in the last couple of days. Coming up, you'll hear about the Sister Study. A new study of sisters aims to help researchers uncover new information about breast cancer. But first, we want to talk about illegal immigration. President Obama has not spoken much about immigration reform since he took office. The issue's been overshadowed, like just about everything else, by the economy. But at least some of the previous administration's immigration measures continue apace. Among them is the use of state and local police to enforce federal immigration laws. The program, known as 287G, has been and continues to be controversial. Law enforcement officials are divided over the costs and benefits of the program, which is one reason it was the subject of a government report and congressional hearing last week. To talk about this, we're joined by Sheriff Chuck Jenkins of the Frederick County Sheriff's Department in Maryland. He testified last week before the House Committee on Homeland Security. We're also joined by Frank Sherry. He is the Executive Director of America's Voice. It's an organization that favors comprehensive immigration reform. I welcome you both. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hi, Michelle. This is Sheriff Jenkins. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry. Thanks for having me. Thank you both. Sheriff, I want to start with you. Nationally, I think I have my numbers right. There are about 67 local and state agencies participating in the 287G program. You have to apply to participate. Why do you want your county to participate in the program?
For two reasons, Michelle. First of all, going back in early 2007, I looked at two specific goals. Number one, the increases in crime regionally that we can attribute to the problem of illegal immigration, which is going unchecked for the most part. Secondly, was the homeland security issue when we think back to 9/11.
Now, you said in your testimony that, well, I'm just quoting from your prepared testimony, you said the enormous increase in crime throughout the United States, including this region, which can be tied directly to the unchecked flow of illegal immigrants through our southern borders with Mexico. You know, a lot of people disagree with that, so I wanted to ask you just about your experience in. And by that, by crimes, I assume you mean apart from immigration violations themselves, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So since this is a matter of some dispute, can you just talk about your experience in Frederick?
I can just tell you that regionally, we have seen over the course of the past number of years an increase in crime involving people who are in this country illegally. Largely from the metropolitan area, we've had the influx of some gang activity here in Frederick County. We're seeing that from the metro area, from Northern Virginia. And frankly, I think it's a tool that law enforcement can use to stop the flow of that gang activity.
And also calling on your testimony before the Congress, by the end of last year, you had arrested, I think, some 337 illegal immigrants, about 309 of whom were placed in removal proceedings. But of that number, I think you reported that only about a dozen had actually violent criminal records, that about nine of them had gang-related activity. Now, of course, that's nine more people than you wish you'd had. But do you think that those numbers really justify the resources that you're spending on this program?
First of all, let me clarify one thing, that I am not spending an enormous amount of resources on this program. I have not created an immigration enforcement unit. I'm simply performing this duty as an extension of our law enforcement piece, both law enforcement and corrections. And frankly, we're not enforcing anything until someone has been arrested, brought into our detention center, they've been identified as being in the country illegally, that they've violated their status here, and then they will be placed, after they've been charged with a state or local crime, they are placed in removal proceedings.
So the status is checked after they've been charged?
After they are charged, after they have been arrested.
After they've been arrested.
They have to have been arrested and brought into our jail through the central booking system. We don't do this enforcement on the street. We do it in our jail.
Okay. Let's hear from Frank Sherry. Let's bring him in. Frank, what's your take on the T87C program?
Well, there's a reason that 95% of the police departments in the country have decided not to participate in the 287G program. And the reason to make it is that it undermines their policing efforts to improve public safety. So, for example, if you have a situation where you have a lot of Latino immigrants, some of them have papers, some of them don't, they live in the same households and neighborhoods, if the word gets out that the police are asking for papers, and if they stop someone for a traffic violation or for a light being out on the car or not using an indicator, that creates a tremendous amount of reluctance in that community to report crimes, to be witnesses. You think you're going to come forward to report a crime, but you run the risk of being detained and deported, it is a disincentive to participate with police. So most police think it's a bad program that they're staying away from. Some departments are trying it. Unfortunately, the poster child of bad programming is in Phoenix, Arizona, where Sheriff Joe Arpaio recruits volunteers. Some call them vigilantes. They stop people who are Latino on various pretexts, sometimes no pretext at all, and they're arrested thousands of people. The GAO recently called for much better supervision of this program because of those abuses.
But private citizens don't have the power to arrest people. So Francis, taking Sheriff Jenkins' point, what is so wrong about checking the immigration status of someone who is already in custody, who presumably has come to the attention of law enforcement for some reason?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong, especially if you're talking about gang members or criminals who have participated in serious felonious activity. Of course, those people should be off the street, and if they don't have immigration status, should be detained and put in deportation proceedings. That's not the question. The question is, if you don't have a well-supervised program, what happens is that police in some jurisdictions are stopping people who look Latino on various small pretexts, arresting them for traffic violations, bringing them into the station, turning them over to the immigration authorities, which creates a tremendous chilling effect in those communities with respect to participating in crime-fighting activities.
Charles, what about that point? The argument is that it's just too easy for law enforcement to divert its attention from people who really are a danger to the community, people who are engaged in violent criminal activity or people who are involved in gang activity, and just go after low-hanging fruit, people who may be here illegally, but whose behavior is just not as critical to public safety as these other individuals.
Well,
and that the diversion and that the focus of law enforcement becomes these routine misdemeanors as opposed to really violent individuals who really need to be the focus of law enforcement attention. What do you say to that argument?
That's simply not the case here in Frederick County. I can tell you that in your other guest there mentioned what would happen on a normal traffic stop. On a normal traffic stop, if the individual happens to be of a certain ethnic group, That stop is made if that person presents a valid Maryland driver's license or from whatever state, and there's no wants or warrants, and there's no problems with the registration of the vehicle, he's given a citation, and he or she is told to have a great day. We're simply not going around cherry-picking the immigrant community. I will tell you this. We take all crime seriously here in Frederick County, both myself, the Maryland State Police, Frederick City Police. We all work proactively against all crime, all violent crime, and serious crime.
But you check the immigration status of everybody you bring in custody?
Everybody that walks into our detention center for central booking before processing is checked in the same identical manner. Yes, ma'am.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Frederick County Sheriff Chuck Jenkins and American Police Executive Director Frank Sherry about immigration policy, specifically a program allowing state and local law enforcement agencies to support or enforce federal immigration policy. Let's broaden it out just a bit if we can. Sheriff Jenkins, in February, President Obama was interviewed by the Spanish language radio host El Piolin, and he had this to say about immigration reform.
We need to get started working on it now. It's going to take some time to move that forward. But I'm very committed to making it happen, and we're going to be convening leadership on this issue so that we can start getting that legislation drawn up over the next several months.
Because overall, did you consider your department's participation in this program a welcome opportunity to support federal immigration efforts? Or do you consider it in a way a failure that you're doing this because the federal government has not done its job?
No, I think it's very easy to make the argument that the federal government has failed. I see this as truly local law enforcement does have a role. Now, you could argue what a role is, but I simply say that it is a part of enforcing the laws. Now, whether or not you politically agree with President Obama or what he says in that broad statement, it's really hard to read. I seriously think that a lot of our problems, again, attributed to crime, both across the country, regionally, and in this immediate area, in this region of Maryland and the metro area, I think could be attributed to the unchecked flow of illegals. And not only through our southern states. We've arrested people who are in this country illegally from all parts of the world.
Frankly,
I just don't see where someone is in this country illegally and they break the law and you get a free pass. I don't believe that's right.
Okay. Frank, Gary, what's your take on this?
Well, the academic studies that have looked at the rate of crime and incarceration are very emphatic on the point that native-born are more likely to commit crime and end up in prison than undocumented immigrants who are taking criminal activity. Have this real upspike in the number of immigrants who have been arrested for immigration offenses, which is, from our point of view, a misdirection of policy. Look, President Obama is right. This is a problem that has to be fixed at the national level. Local governments can help, but they can't solve it. What we need is Congress and the White House to work together to fashion a comprehensive overhaul that will make sure that the people here are legal, that the hiring is legal, that unscrupulous employers don't get an advantage by abusing scared and exploitable undocumented workers, that everyone's paying their fair share of taxes, and that we have a legal system that the public can have confidence in. That's the heart of comprehensive immigration.
And Frank, finally, just very briefly, what about Sheriff Jenkins' point of if you're in a country illegally, why shouldn't you be held accountable if you break the law in some other way?
I think you should. I think those who violate our criminal laws should be held to account. Those who do so are here illegally. They should be subject to deportation. But in addition, if we're going to solve the fact that we have 12 million people here, most of whom are hardworking members of families who are trying to create a better life for themselves. Are we going to deport them? I don't think so. Are we going to harass them so that they leave? I don't think we should. Can we have a fix that allows these folks to get on the right side of the law at the same time we make sure we don't reproduce the problem of millions of people in our country? That's what comprehensive immigration reform could do, and I think President Obama will move on it this fall.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there for now, Sheriff. We gave you the first word, so we're going to give Frank the last word. Frank Sherry is the Executive Director of America's Voice. That's an organization that favors comprehensive immigration reform. He was kind enough to join us from our New York Bureau. And Sheriff Chuck Jenkins is the Sheriff of the Frederick County, Maryland Sheriff's Department. He was kind enough to join us from his office in Frederick County.
Well, there you have it. The ruse about comprehensive immigration reform, as Mr. Sherry says, that's what we need. So in the meantime, let's do nothing until we have this comprehensive immigration reform. And I don't know if you recall, not this past summer, but the summer before last, the number one problem of Americans of both political parties, anywhere from 60 to 80%, said that illegal immigration was the number one problem in the United States. Now, with the economy in the state that it's in, I suspect it's dropped in rank and in terms of poll results. But and they always pick out, you know, the poster boy for the bad action relative to this is Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who, again, I believe is standing up and doing something while others do absolutely nothing. Well, this next clip, we're going to listen to the issue about targeting illegals and ID theft, identification theft, and very interesting subject. So bear with me here just a second, and we'll raise this one up. It's working.
Feeling lost in a sea of economic news? Start making sense of it on Planet Money. Now blogging, podcasting, and taking your questions at npr.org/money.
The Supreme Court is hearing a case tomorrow on when and how the government can use identity theft charges against illegal immigrants. In northern Colorado, the DA has arrested more than 1,000 people based on identity theft evidence in their tax records. They face possible deportation. Colorado Public Radio's Megan Verlee has more. It was just after 5 in the evening when the policeman arrived at Brenda Miranda's door last November. The officers asked for Cesar Jimenez, a man she'd never heard of. As Miranda explained that, her husband came to see what was the matter. They proceeded to ask him what his name was. He told them Jose Mendoza. He was still in his work clothes, and he still had his tool belt on. At that point, they took his tool belt off and handcuffed him.
Miranda eventually learned her husband had been working under the identity of Cesar Jimenez.
You can go out on the street corner here and you can buy a false identity.
That's Weld County District Attorney Ken Buck, one of the driving forces behind Operation Numbers Game, the investigation which has yielded more than 40 arrests so far, with potentially hundreds more to come. It all started last year with a routine case of identity theft. Deputies interviewed the suspect's tax preparer, Amalia Cerillo, and Buck says they got more than they bargained for.
The sheriff's office received information from Amalia that she prepared tax returns that would indicate identity theft or criminal impersonation in a number of cases.
Officers got a search warrant to seize all of Cerillo's tax records. More than 1,300 of them had the same smoking gun.
The W-2 would contain the false information and the 1040 would contain accurate information.
What that means is that undocumented immigrants were using fake or stolen information on their work forms, but using their real identities when filing taxes. If that sounds confusing, welcome to a strange little corner of tax policy. The IRS wants everyone, regardless of immigration status, to pay their taxes, so it allows people who don't have Social Security numbers to apply for what's called an Individual Taxpayer Identification Number, or ITIN. ITINs were set up for resident aliens and others who work in the U.S. legally, but people familiar with the system say it's also used by plenty of people who are here illegally. Generally, privacy laws prevent the IRS from sharing tax documents with other government agencies, like immigration. Rebecca Smith is with the National Employment Law Project, a group that's advising immigrants in this case.
The IRS walks a very delicate balance between allowing folks to pay their taxes and encouraging that activity, right? the DA's activity here is really an end run around those privacy protections.
The ACLU of Colorado has filed a class action lawsuit alleging Weld County's sheriff and district attorney violated privacy law by seizing tax records indiscriminately. The ACLU's legal director, Mark Silverstein, compares the case to a situation where police know there are drug dealers living in the neighborhood but aren't sure exactly where.
The police can't conduct a house-by-house or apartment-by-apartment search because they know that in the building or in the neighborhood they're going to uncover some evidence of crime. They have to have a more particularized and targeted search.
If the Colorado courts uphold District Attorney Ken Buck's sweeping seizure of tax records to look for identity theft and, by proxy, illegal immigrants, the case could have far-reaching consequences. Buck says he's already gotten a few calls from other law enforcement agencies, but in his words, not enough.
I'm surprised that not more people are concerned about stopping identity theft and criminal impersonation in this country.
Why are people at risk of deportation even filing taxes at all? Buck has a reason. The majority of suspects in the case ended up getting more money back from the government than they paid in.
Incredible.
That's because they qualified for the additional child tax credit. But Brenda Miranda, whose husband was arrested in the case, says there's a bigger motivation.
We did it because we hoped that if one day there was some kind of amnesty or reform, we would be able to prove to the government that we were paying our taxes legally.
Miranda's hope for amnesty brings up the one thing everyone involved in this case, from the DA to the ACLU, says they want: immigration reform. Until then, all sides say these local skirmishes over immigration will only continue. For NPR News, I'm Megan Verlee.
Tricky, isn't it? You know, I think about six bright people in about 3 weeks could probably resolve this in terms of a federal policy that would include local cooperation, and we could probably reduce illegal immigration substantially and take care of some of the ones that are here illegally and who are cheating us on a daily basis in the United States. Let's take a look here at a little more direct hit piece on Sheriff Arpaia, kind of an interesting one, and I think you'll enjoy this.
The NPR Shop invites you to enjoy Driveway Moments Mom, a collection of NPR stories to celebrate mom every week. CD set available at shop.npr.org.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. A new television show debuts this weekend on the Fox Reality Channel.
Files, you're under arrest.
Yes, that's the name of the show. Smile, you're under arrest. Uses elaborate setups to lure unsuspecting fugitives. They've been arrested by Sheriff Deputy in Maricopa County, Arizona. The Phoenix area. The sheriff there is Joe Arpaio, who's been called America's toughest sheriff. This new reality show, Sheriff Arpaio is dishing out the heat, but as NPR's Ted Robbins reports, the department is taking some heat, too.
Sheriff Joe Arpaio stands at the podium in the squad room and addresses his deputy.
This is a very dangerous assignment to go after fugitives. You never know what's going to happen when these guys are wanted.
The premise is a twist on two TV genres, Candid Camera, or more recently, Punk, and Police Ride-Along, like the show Cops. In the first episode, actors lure men with outstanding warrants against them to a fake fashion show. Then, the cops
put them in handcuffs.
Joe Arpaio first became famous with his tent city for prisoners, putting them in pink underwear and striped pajamas. More recently, he's had deputies arrest the illegal immigrants in controversial neighborhood suites. He says he agreed to do this show because it seemed like a good fit and because it cost his department nothing. In fact, Arpaio says it saved money.
The producers went through 3,900
of our warrants to research the show. So we had them doing our work for us.
To the extent it aids the law enforcement function, more power to them.
Otherwise, says Clint Bullock, the sheriff is doing a lousy job. Bullock is with the Goldwater Institute, a Phoenix-based think tank. He just released a report titled Mission Unaccomplished, The Misplaced Priorities of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office.
We looked at the mission of the sheriff's office as it defined it and evaluated it and found that it comes up short in every area.
The report notes the violent crime rate in Maricopa County, including homicides, is up, far higher than in Phoenix or neighboring Mesa. The response time for 911 calls is twice that of Phoenix. The sheriff's jails recently lost accreditation for not providing adequate health care to inmates. Meanwhile, deputies are routinely sent to Honduras to train police there. And back home, Bullock says the sheriff's highly publicized immigrant suites have not netted a single major smuggler.
If you've got limited resources, who do you go after? The guy who is here to work or the guy who is making millions of dollars bringing in thousands? Certainly the latter.
I'm very disappointed about that Goldwater Institute, and I have nothing to do with it. I will never have anything to do with it.
Arpaio may be disappointed because the Goldwater Institute is a rock-ribbed conservative-slash-libertarian outfit. Up until now, criticism has come from local newspapers and liberal activists who oppose the immigration. The sheriff dismisses the report as a rehash of old charges or inaccurate. Clint Bullock says it's as accurate as the sheriff's own record keeping.
It's atrocious. If you live in almost any town or city that has a police department and you're concerned about crime statistics in your neighborhood, you can go online and find out exactly what the crime rates are. If you go on the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, you'll see a lot of self-congratulatory information, but you will not see any statistics.
Last month, Joe Arpaio easily won re-election, and he says he'll keep doing things his own way, including, smile, you're under arrest.
All I want is to catch fugitives. So you guys are willing to go do it? Hey, be my guest.
Okay, we're rolling on off.
Well, the sheriff's doing something that's unpopular to many in Maricopa County in the state of Arizona, but popular to a substantial number of people that keep electing him. He just got elected this past fall to his fifth term. I think we're going to roll right over into another hit piece on Sheriff Apaya. I have a whole series of these, and very few of these public comments have anything to do with these accomplishments, although occasionally we can find some of those. If we have time, I'll play those also. But here's another one that takes a direct shot at the sheriff. This is about some of his foes to his practices.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Andrea Seabrook. The man known as America's toughest sheriff got a tough message from a federal judge this week. Clean up your jails by improving sanitation and nutrition. The message didn't do much for Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio's relations with the cities and towns he served. Sheriff Arpaio made his name by campaigning to rid the Phoenix area of illegal immigrants, but that campaign has ticked off some mayors and police chiefs. And as NPR's Ted Robbins reports, it could leave one community without law enforcement altogether.
The surveillance tapes show it clearly. In the early morning hours of October 16th, people carrying weapons and wearing flak jackets entering three city buildings in Mesa, Arizona. They were 30 sheriff's deputies and 30 members of a volunteer posse there on a tip that illegal immigrants were inside working for a contractor on a cleaning crew. The deputies arrested 16 people. The whole thing took place without notifying the Mesa Police Department. That outraged Mesa Mayor Scott Smith, who spoke to reporters later that day.
I think all of us can understand how it's easy for someone to make a mistake and guns start firing. And you have two police departments out there at the same time. They don't know what each other's doing.
Here's some context. police department, headed by appointed chiefs, enforce the law within the boundaries of a town or city. Sheriffs are usually elected officials responsible for running jails and enforcing the law in unincorporated or rural portions of a county. When they do go into cities, they usually work with police. But Sheriff Joe Arpaio says Mesa police don't vigorously enforce illegal immigration laws, so he has
to. They should be thanking us that we locked up a bunch of felons that they refused to lock up.
The Mesa incident was just the latest over the last year where Sheriff Joe, as fans call it, has gone where he wasn't invited to arrest illegal immigrants. In March and April, Guadalupe, Arizona Mayor Rebecca Jimenez argued with Arpaio over his show of force in her town.
You don't want us back here tomorrow? We want to be back here tomorrow.
Demonstrators yelled the sheriff arrested 150 people. About half of what he said were illegal immigrants. Then he told Jimenez,
if you don't like the way I operate, you go build your own police department.
And that's what they're being forced to do. Last month, at the sheriff's request, the county canceled its contract with Guadalupe to provide law enforcement. The small town is poor, with fewer than 6,000 largely Hispanic and Indian residents. It says it can't afford its own police force. The sheriff reached in his home, says, too bad. He gets paid to enforce all the laws, take it or leave it.
We do this as a favor to them. Evidently, they don't appreciate that.
Guadalupe is suing the sheriff and the county for terminating its contract. The town and other critics say the sheriff is being vindictive to Guadalupe, Mesa, even Phoenix, where earlier this year he ran immigration sweep. What all these places have in common are policies that say enforcing immigration law is primarily a federal responsibility. Dan Sabin is a former police chief of Buckeye, Arizona, a Democrat who is running against the Republican Arpaio in the upcoming election. He told a TV station,
the voters have to question why would 16 police chiefs within this county do it one way, and we have a county attorney and the sheriff doing it another way.
Sabin says law enforcement budgets are better spent investigating things like violent crime. The sheriff says he can do it all, and he doesn't care what critics say.
I report to the people. I've always been elected because I go right to the people, not the politicians or the bureaucrats.
And the people, at least Maricopa County voters, are expected to re-elect Arpaio to another term. Ted Robbins, NPR News.
And, of course, they did elect me. I'm going to roll right over into one more segment about Arpaio taking on some of its votes.
Illegal immigrants may be flowing into much of the nation, but they're apparently fleeing Arizona. In fact, legal immigrants are leaving the state, too. Arizona has passed a series of laws restricting services and making it tougher to find jobs. So, over the next 3 days, we're going to introduce you to three Arizona men influencing the debate over illegal immigration. One makes the laws. One is fighting those laws. We start with the man enforcing the laws at all costs.
These demonstrators have placards, I'm a Nazi, KKK. But you know what? The more they go after me, the more I go in their face.
Joe Arpaio of Maricopa County is dubbed America's toughest sheriff. And NPR's Ted Robbins has his story.
If you want to know the man his fans call Sheriff Joe, you might want to start at one of his jails, a place called Tent City. It's Joe Arpaio's most famous invention, a vast open-air annex in South Phoenix that houses 2,000 prisoners. They live outside,
sleeping on cots in hundreds of old canvas tents in the broiling summer heat and the chilly desert winter. It looks like a Korean War-era army camp. The idea is to make life tough and humiliating. Inmate Stephen Pleasant models the sheriff's fashion creation, a black and white striped uniform, usually worn over pink underwear.
So yeah, you got pink thermals. Yeah.
Actually, we're short on the thermals. We don't have any thermals yet. 5 a.m, we'll be there getting our bottles.
For food, the sheriff served inmates green, as in fetid, bologna sandwiches. Sheriff Joe Arpaio's policies are either innovative or a throwback to harsher times. Either way, his tactics and his colorful personality have kept him in the news pretty much since he took office in 1993.
Everything I do is publicized. When I go to the toilet, they publicize. You do know that. So I'm being a little sarcastic, but it shows whatever I do, they pretty well publicize it, especially if it's controversial.
What the sheriff doesn't say is that he often seeks that publicity, even calling a news conference recently in a central Phoenix parking lot to announce ahead of time a crime suppression operation.
I want everybody to know about this. Maybe they won't be violating the laws if they knew that we're going to catch them.
He says it's to catch all criminals, but the headline on the sheriff's news release narrows it down a bit. It says illegal immigrant arrests expected. Illegal immigrants are Joe Arpaio's latest target, especially in this neighborhood. For months, it's been the site of protests over day laborers, often illegal immigrants, who line the streets looking for work.
If we come across any illegal aliens during the course of this operation, they will be arrested and put in jail.
Arrested using another of the sheriff's innovations, he's taken a state law intended for human smugglers and used it to arrest any illegal immigrant for smuggling themselves. His is the only agency in the state using the law that way.
Why?
Down at the county jail, which houses prisoners from a number of jurisdictions in the Phoenix area, Arpaio employs one more tactic. Someone is booked on any charge. They are taken to a row of computers hooked into the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, database.
What's the first grade of Social Security? What country are you a national citizen of?
Sheriff Deputy Amy Kuhn is one of 160 Maricopa County Sheriff deputies trained to enforce federal immigration law. The sheriff says since last May, more than 7,000 illegal immigrants have been detained for ICE this way. According to the agreement with ICE, prisoners are only supposed to be held on immigration charges if they were arrested for something else first. But on this night, at least one illegal immigrant was arrested for simply being a passenger in a car that was stopped. Arpaio justifies his practices.
We put the holds on them so they won't be released back to the streets. We do that since the cops will not do it.
That was a dig at the Phoenix Police Department, which has a policy of not asking citizenship on arrest, an immigrant-friendly policy now under review because public opinion has turned against immigrants. And if there's one thing Sheriff Joe Arpaio is sensitive to, it's public opinion. Michael Lacey is executive editor of Phoenix New Times, an alternative weekly paper. He says the sheriff wasn't always so gung-ho on arresting illegal immigrants.
He's got a very famous quote about he wasn't going to be busting corn vendors or getting Mexicans on the street looking for work, that there were real criminals out there. But he discovered that there were votes in going after Mexicans.
This segment goes on for about 4 or 5 more minutes. I think what we're going to do, I think folks would appreciate it, we're just going to roll this topic over into next week and perhaps add a guest who can give us some expert or outside commentary on the issue. But personally, I say I commend Sheriff Joe. I mean, politics. Would a sheriff be political? You know, there are lots of definitions of politics, who gets what, when, and why. That would be one. The authoritative allocation of scarce resources, that was David Eastman's definition of politics, and Haley's definition is the accumulation and application of forces to accomplish your ends, and public support and media attention is part of that accumulation of forces to get done what you want. So ladies and gentlemen, we'll
hope you join us next week, and we'll continue with this topic. I think it deserves at least one more week, and you join us, and certainly we will be meeting again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny.